ahead and get started since it's 10:03. And I can go through the individuals that are on the call for attendance purposes as well, and then I'll hand it over to you if that's okay.
Yeah, that's perfect. Thank you,
Kirby. Okay, great. Hi, all. This is Kirby Fi with the department. Thank you for joining today's adult committee meeting, the last one of 2020. I'm going to just go through a few things. I know we're all probably WebEx pros at this point because we've had so many meetings held virtually, but just a few reminders to please mute your phone or your computer if you're not speaking, just to prevent any feedback from coming through. To also state your name before you ask a question, just so we can get that for the minutes. And one last reminder, per Governor Lee's Executive Order 60, this meeting will be recorded and posted to the department website. I'm going to go ahead and go through the attendance. First, I'll go through the individuals who have joined in via computer so as I can see their name. And then we'll go through the individuals who have called in. So again, my name is Kirby Fi. I'm with the department. We have Amy Holland, also with the department. Allison White. Avis Easley, Candace Allen, Monty Burks, let's see if I could scroll down here, Evelyn Juergen, Jan Cagle, Kara Coleman, Kurt Hipple. I know we have Ginger Nasri on the phone, and I see three other individuals who have called in. If you don't mind to please state your name.
Jack Stewart.
Hi, Jack.
Good morning.
Sam Flagel.
Hi, Sam.
This is Lincoln Kaufman.
Lincoln Kaufman, welcome. Okay. If I see anybody else pop up, Ginger, throughout the call, I'll state that at the end when we're wrapping up. But otherwise, I'm going to go ahead and hand it over to you.
Thank you so much, Kirby, and I appreciate everybody joining the call. Hopefully, in the new year, we'll actually get to see people face-to-face at our statewide committees, which will be kind of a treat, I guess. And what a year it's been. I want to just take a moment to thank you all for participating throughout the whole year on this, and hopefully we'll see some progress as we move forward. Just want to take a moment to make sure everybody got their agenda. Kirby sent that out on Monday, and there's some information from our presenter also attached to that agenda. So Dr. Burks, can I introduce you as the speaker and let you take it away from here?
Surely you can. I look forward. I'm excited about it.
We're excited too, and hopefully you can help us process some new ideas. Thank you.
You're welcome. Are y'all ready for me?
I'm ready for you. Thanks.
Okay, gotcha.
Do you have
Dr. Burks included his slide deck on the agenda if you have a chance, folks on the phone or can go and look at that.
All right, just tell me when y'all are ready and I am ready to roll.
Okay, we're ready to roll. Thank you, Dr. Burks.
You're welcome. First, I want to say hello to everybody, and I haven't seen a lot of you in a long time. I know that we've not been able to connect, but I have emailed back and forth. I just want to say hi to everyone. I haven't seen your faces or been able to hear your voice in person, but I'm glad to hear you on this phone call today. What's up, Avis? Hey, Lincoln. Hey, Amy, Candace, all of you wonderful folks around the state of Tennessee. I'm thankful for what you do. The recovery community is always thankful for any kind of collaborations and work that we can all do together, because we all know that us knowing what each one of our roles are is only a great benefit and an asset to the state of Tennessee. So I'm going to go into my slides. I'm actually going to skip the first couple of slides. They're going to be in your slide deck, but I'm actually going to go to about the fourth slide. And I just want to share these numbers with you and just kind of set a baseline on really what some of the reasons why we started our faith-based initiative. And these are some numbers that I really wanted to drive in. Between 1999 and 2015, the rise in opioid dependency rose significantly in our state. We lost over 900 million work hours. And if you multiply that 900 million work hours times the current minimum wage, that's $6.5 billion in Tennessee lost to only the opioid epidemic. That's not counting other things that have caused people to be, families to be disrupted or people to be disconnected to work and to traditional culture and to, you know, success, being successful and thriving. So this is something, you know, something for us to think about and something for us to see. And this was also something for us to really start driving home the concept of our faith-based initiative, because we saw these numbers rise. So what was the paradigm shift that we needed to get the faith community to be involved in the continuum of care, prevention, treatment, recovery, criminal justice, understanding that relapse is a significant part of prevention, treatment, recovery, criminal justice, understanding that relapse is a part of recovery, and how can we get our communities to start looking at people different? We know that as all as professional practitioners, how you view people is how you treat people. We know that we needed to somehow create a paradigm shift within the community so our community could start to rehumanize their own neighbors. You know, we in every culture, in every religion, in every belief system, we always have something really close to that says, love your neighbor, respect your neighbor. And by doing so, we can create this wonderful opportunity, a space for people to find recovery, people to find access to treatment, people to find housing, better yet, people to just find community. And community is one of the major pieces of and correlations to people having a successful recovery journey. So how were we going to get this paradigm shift? Well, we wanted to leverage the faith community. We wanted to partner with Tennessee's large faith community. We have over 12,000 different congregations and religious institutions. This includes religious and faith-based nonprofits. Tennessee ranks 10th in the United States for number of congregations per person. And I think that that's an awesome way to look at it. I know that everyone on here doesn't have a faith tradition. So let's just look at the sheer numbers. You have 3.5 million people who attend congregational services in Tennessee. We have less than 6.8 million people in the state. Over 50% of our state's population attend congregational services. So the faith community is a unique, strategically located resource in our community. So let's start talking about what does that mean as far as strategic capacity. Faith community can help. We lost almost in 2017, 2018, we lost almost 3,000 Tennesseans each year to overdose and suicide combined. You do the math, there were over 2,500 people per one person who died of a suicide death and an overdose death. You know, everyone on this phone call, if you don't know me, if you can look up my story online. I've always shared my story. It only took a couple of people to help me get into a recovery program that helped me get my life back on track. So you imagine 2,500 people per one person who needs help. I mean, that's a unique and golden opportunity for us to be able to really get resources to the community so they can be that one or two people. So what are our faith-based initiatives goals? This is where that strategic capacity comes in. Connect individuals struggling with addiction to treatment. And also people with mental health issues, behavioral health issues in the community, to get them back into treatment or to community so they can start establishing their own path and their own process. Facilitating understanding of what treatment and recovery are. Know the difference. We found through working through various communities, especially when you work with faith communities who have traditions older than state government, that sometimes the word treatment and sometimes the word recovery were interchangeable, but we wanted to make sure they understood what we were talking about when we talked about an evidence-based standards, dealing with people getting find treatment, helping people find recovery support. Increased knowledge of what addiction and mental health are. Let's talk about addiction. Let's understand the concept behind the addicted brain, the brain chemistry changing. Let's understand that a mental health condition or diagnosis is not the person, it's a diagnosis. Understanding person first language, understanding that these are our neighbors. Sometimes things happen to people. That is just a common occurrence. So let's be part of the proactive rebuilding of our communities. Understand what our continuum of care is and collaborate with that continuum of care. Again, prevention, treatment, recovery, criminal justice. There's something amazing. Relapse falls in the middle of all of those. So does the faith community in its work ability or capacity. Faith communities can do prevention work. They can work with treatment programs to provide resources to get people to treatment. They can work with recovery communities. They can be the recovery community. They can work with the criminal justice system inside of the jail or prison and outside of the jail or prison. So again, the faith community can attach to the continuum in the same places that relapse attaches to the continuum. So that's a thought. That's something to think about. Help and understand our best practice model and promote and improve the effectiveness of our faith-based initiative. Listen, everybody who knows me knows that I think that all 12,000 religious institutions ought to have a recovery program or at least know the ones in their community. In reality, will that ever happen? I don't know. But I know that it's my job and it's incumbent on me as in the position that I'm in to target that 12,000 to go after. So how do we get started? Leveraging our communities, our community anti-drug coalition, substance abuse prevention coalitions, which house our project lifeliners and our faith-based coordinators, treatment and recovery courts, formerly known as drug court. I'm thankful that our state is taking a proactive approach to call treatment and recovery courts, treatment and recovery courts. There's a really negative when people hear the word drug court, sometimes they associate such negative activity to people that are trying to change. Addiction recovery programs are ARP agencies. Some are on this phone call right now. Local health departments, educators, law enforcement agencies involved in the process around building recovery communities. And also colleges and universities, collegiate recovery, understanding that there are still people who actively function in their addictions, people who have underlying diagnoses that still function every day, but they still need community to be able to survive and thrive. So how do we build this capacity with the team, with these groups of people that we leverage? Well, through our certified peers. I'm thankful to work closely with Lisa Reagan and Michelle Webster to really drive the message home on how important it is for people with lived experience to be part of the process. And to all of our practitioners on here who don't necessarily have lived experience, people with lived experience aren't trying to take your place. People with lived experience are trying to be the bridge between the community to get people to you so you can do what you do. Certified peers understand sometimes what people are saying from a different perspective than someone who's not necessarily been or walked through that. So all of the peers that we work with are going to be connected to through our faith-based community, through our faith-based coordinators, our project lifeliners. And at the end, I'm going to mention our recovery navigators, which is a program that is overseen by our director, Jessica Ivy. So what are the network of certified peer recovery specialists? I'm trying to move my screen just a little bit. There we go. They help others on a path to recovery from mental illness or substance abuse, have firsthand experience with mental illness and or substance abuse, and can offer support and understanding. Somebody who's been through something sometimes can hear a completely different song than someone who hasn't. Or their experience may help someone understand what other resources are. 2 years in recovery, use their personal story to help other people and promote self-determination, personal responsibility, and empowerment. So we have three faith-based coordinators. They're one located in each one of Tennessee's grand divisions. Our faith-based community coordinators are so awesome. Their jobs are to recruit and certify congregations as recovery congregations. There are three faith-based community coordinators, one in each one of Tennessee's grand divisions. Each one is housed in a substance abuse prevention coalition around the state, as I mentioned earlier. I like to move away from the terminology community anti-drug and focus more on substance abuse prevention. Although the terminology, while it still is the same group of people, sometimes I know words can push people to have a misleading understanding of what our community groups do. So what is this best practice model that we work with to attach our faith community? One, provide spiritual or pastoral support according to the congregation's culture. Listen, it's not our job to come in and tell anyone from any faith tradition how to do anything. We're simply coming in with tools that they can use that may fit their culture to help them serve, if for nothing else, do in-reach in their community to just serve their community, understanding what respectfully to traditions, understanding the different types of 12 steps and what may be a logical fit to work within their community. And what I mean by that is in our Christian faith, some of our Christian programs only want to work with a program that is geared to how they understand their recovery. Some of our other programs, like in our Islamic community, our Jewish community, our Baha'i community, only want to work with 12-step models that fit how they believe and how they walk. That is good for community, and it may only work for their congregation. But guess what? That's another recovery meeting, and that's another group of people who have an opportunity to be free from bondage. View addiction by its definition as a treatable disease. Again, we're looking beyond the language of moral failing. That's not something that we try to make sure our communities understand, that addiction is a treatable disease. Understanding brain chemistry, brain science behind addiction. Embrace and support people in recovery. Walk with them on their journey. Our faith communities already do that. That's called fellowship. They do it in their own way, and I think it's awesome. Disseminate recovery information. Our teams can provide that. Host or refer individuals to recovery support groups and become a certified recovery congregation. So here are some of the types of ministries and things that we've helped create and some that we work with across the state of Tennessee. Employment services and job training. Who knew that faith communities could do employment services and job training? Relapse prevention, resume writing, life skills, housing assistance, education, transportation, marriage and family education, case management, peer-to-peer services, mentoring, coaching. All of you that have traveled around the state know that when we get into remote corners of the state, our faith community is the only resource that has been there for since the state has been founded. So we want to make sure that we strategically give our faith communities resources so they can get that information out to their community. So here's a way that we reach out to our faith communities. We share this online. We share this when we go out to our meetings. We do presentations around the state 3 to 4 days a week. Even through COVID, we've utilized WebEx, FaceTime, Zoom, Facebook Live, and a host of other different type of online platforms. We always run this QR code in the back. If any of you know a pastor, clergy, or leadership that would like to be involved, QR scan this with your iPhone right now. If you've got an Android, I think you have to download an app. I don't think the camera automatically does it. But if you hold up your iPhone to this box, to this QR scan, a box will pop up. You send that link to anyone, clergy, tell them to send that information through, register the congregation, and connect with our team. I'll leave this up for a second. This is an awesome way to connect with people. We get QR scans that come in from all over the world, from people that are wanting to work with us. But fortunately, we only work with Tennessee, but we love to connect and partner with other states. To date, we have 736 recovery congregations. We provided educational forums in every single one of Tennessee's 95 counties. We have faith-based representation or partners at some form or capacity in every single county in the state of Tennessee. And these pictures here are awesome. Lincoln Kaufman is on this phone call. He is my Shelby County Lifeliner. That is actually Lincoln, if you look in the picture. To the far left is Xavier. And the second one beside me, that's Lincoln. Lincoln, I had to throw you a shout out because I know you're on the phone. Lincoln is a Lifeliner. Xavier is a coalition director. Arsania beside me is a navigator. Brandon Powell is a Lifeliner. Diane is a Lifeliner. And Melissa is a regional overdose prevention specialist, a RUP. So here's the map of our faith-based coordinators and their contact information. Again, this is in the slide set that you have. So you can take the, you can contact them, send their information to faith-based partners in the community. Again, our faith-based coordinators work with our diverse religious and faith community to help them build recovery programs, or at least access recovery support resources, understanding how they can work with already existing programs. So what is our Lifeline project? This is the second tier. The Lifeline Project was established to reduce the stigma related to the disease of addiction, and increase community support for policies that provide for treatment and recovery services, and humanize the concept of behavioral health. You know, having a substance use disorder diagnosis or a mental health diagnosis isn't the end of the world. It's actually the beginning of a new journey. And we want to make sure that our teams are out and present to connect all of these wonderful resources and our wonderful people who have this lived experience. The project approaches include establishment of evidence-based addiction and recovery programs. Sorry, I clicked past. Educational presentations for all groups in the community, not just faith community, civic groups. Any group that wants to do a that needs them to come in and do presentations, and I'll go over some of the stuff they present in some of the later slides. There are 17 Lifeliners. We just expanded to 7 more in the middle of FY20. So we have 7 more that we've added. Their outcomes, almost 5,600 recovery trainings in the last 6 years. They've referred almost 11,300 people to treatment and other types of recovery support services. And they started well over 600 new recovery meetings. again, these are people that all have lived experience that have been through situations that sometimes people want to count them out, but they've been willing to come back in that second and third round and really be able to give everything they have to help other people not have to suffer through some of the things that they did when they were trying to find their sobriety, trying to find their freedom from addiction, trying to find their resource and the resiliency path from a mental health diagnosis. Here's a picture again of some of our coordinators. To the right, Alan Burnett, Secretary Ann Haslew, who was formerly with the White House. Myself, Commissioner Williams, Will Taylor, Lifeline, Dave Hodges, Lifeline. And to the left, Jamie Harper, our faith-based community coordinator from Middle Tennessee. That's an awesome-looking group of people. I had just been sunburned in that picture, so you can all laugh at me at that point. My smile was not out of happiness. It was because my face hurt. Here's a map of our Lifeliners. In the regular boxes are long-standing Lifeliners, and in the bottom are new hybrid Lifeliners that are 7 additions. So some of the types of trainings they offer for mental health or trauma-informed care: question, persuade, refer, which is a suicide prevention. We do a lot of those trainings in partnership with my good friends at the Tennessee Suicide Prevention Network, TSPN. Apply suicide intervention skills training, assist, which is a 2-day training. Building strong brains, which is one of the, the 8 ACEs, understanding ACEs. Mental health first aid. Some that deal with substance abuse and other addictions. The addicted mind, the addicted brain. Faith and recovery. Religion versus spirituality and recovery. Support group facilitation is one of the most important trainings that they can provide, because it is an opportunity for our faith community to really understand the concept behind recovery support, what a support group looks like, the diversity of a support group. And here's one of the most important ones. What if a person needs more than one support group? That's a common question. What if they need more than 12 steps? Remember, recovery support is an ongoing process that could last the span of a person's lifetime. Sexual addiction and compulsion in the congregation. So just really quick, I want to mention the recovery navigators, which are another group of individuals that are in long-term recovery. They're a network of peers in long-term recovery who provide access points to treatment and recovery resources. Their primary responsibility is to meet patients who have recently overdosed in an ER and ED. They inform a patient about the services available to them to enter treatment and eventually long-term recovery. Their goal is, by meeting patients where they are, is to break the cycle of addiction and overdoses, increase the number of people who find access to recovery. The role of the navigator. The navigator is a CPRS with lived experience and a resource for ERs and EDs. They are not law enforcement, doctor, therapists, or clinicians, counselors, or sponsors. Our navigators are Lifeliners, are faith-based coordinators. We're trying to get communities to understand how to work with law enforcement. We're trying to partner with our doctors, our therapists, clinicians, counselors, sponsors, to everyone to be part of the same process, to understand that it's one circle, that we're trying to find access to resources for people in many different communities. We know that everybody doesn't need to go to a doctor. Some people need to go to a coach. Not everybody needs to go to a coach. Some people need to go to a therapist. It's not my place to diagnose or give that assessment for anyone. But when people know what the resources are and know how to access those resources, they're more than likely going to access the resources. Just some of the data from the navigators. Between July 1st, 2019 and June 30th, 2020, they served 3,776 patients. And the patients have been residents of 88 of Tennessee's 95 counties. Out of the 2,905 patients that the navigator saw in the EDs, 42% expressed interest and were recommended to Project Lifeline, and 40% expressed interest in being in touch with one of our recovery congregations, with our faith-based community. So if you think about that, all of these peers, these ancillary projects, all know how to work together: the regional overdose prevention specialists, the navigators, the Lifeliners, the criminal justice liaisons, the faith-based coordinators. They all know of each other as a resource in the community and understand that they don't necessarily have to go into each other's workspace. They just know about each other's workspace, and they understand how to connect people to our programs, to our ARP agencies, our treatment programs, to our CAPS in Memphis, our Buffalo Valleys in Middle Tennessee, our Next Doors, our Serenity House, our programs all across our state that provide these wonderful resources to help people find their sobriety, their freedom. The connection, faith-based community coordinators recruit and build relationships with congregations willing to follow that simple best practice model. Lifeline works with those volunteer congregations to help them build recovery support programs, and the navigators work with Lifeline to identify community-based resources, including but not limited to recovery congregations. All three work together to help individuals get into treatment and support services. And with that, I'm going to go, and I think I'm out of time. So that is my time, and I'm not sure if I'm open for questions, but I will leave that to the powers that be. I want to thank you all for giving me the space to do this presentation today. Forgive me, my sinuses have went haywire because of the weather change, but I'm excited to see everybody's name pop up. I love you all. If Debbie Hillen is on here, hey, Debbie, I haven't seen you in a while, but I had your socks on that you bought me just the other day. I love you and I miss you.
Well, thank you, Dr. Burk. I do think we probably have some time, and if you're open to questions, we would love to be able to ask you a few.
Hey, absolutely. Not a problem at all. Hey, Kurt.
So
I'll answer any questions that I can.
Okay. And this is Ginger, and I'm from Region 1, and I just want to thank you personally because I can see things happening up here. And of course, we love Jason Abernathy. He's such a great resource for us, for helping us connect to resources. And we're over the moon with Polly Jensen as a navigator. So they have been so instrumental in helping folks get connected to care and to resources. So beautiful people doing beautiful things. I do have a question about housing and the faith-based community. Is that something that you've heard a lot about from your interactions with faith-based communities?
Can you say it again? What I couldn't hear the first part of the question.
It's about housing, and have they made any comments or concerns or had any kind of words about housing as you've had discussion? That's kind of been a consistent need, I think, and just wondering
Absolutely.
What their is. Thank you.
So You're welcome. So a lot of our faith communities, that's an absolutely awesome question. And Nehru Govan is our director of housing services in our department, and he's working closely with East Tennessee as well. He's working with the rest of the state through his housing coordinators, the T coordinators. So the faith community does ask questions specifically about housing because a lot of times people transition out of the jail system, out of treatment and recovery programs. They go to the faith communities for other types of resources. And one of the things they ask for is housing or access to housing. We try to get our faith communities to partner with our CHI program, at least if for nothing else, to know what resources are available in their communities. Also to partner with our Project Lifeliners who do know of different types of housing that may not necessarily be in your region. Region 1 does not have a lot of housing resources. And that's unfortunate, but hopefully maybe in the future post-COVID, maybe we can partner with some of these faith communities to kind of try to reach out more strategically, build opportunities for housing, because our faith communities do, and I want to say this for everybody that's listening, our faith communities do have a lot of other types of resources that we've really not tapped into as professional practitioners. So maybe we should figure out a way to get people to the board. And I'm speaking like this because post-COVID, we're not 100% sure how we're all going to react once everybody gets back out and acclimated to the community. So I think that there's going to be more open conversations on how we can collaborate to get people into new and exciting opportunities for resources. So, yes, the answer is yes. The question is out there. The answer is also yes, that we're going to try to help in any form or capacity we can. And also reach out to Nehru Govan's shop and find out what exists in East Tennessee in Region 1 and Region 2. I know Region 1 and Region 2, as they straddle each other, people have to go outside of each one of their regions to find supportive housing and employment. So thank you for asking that. And I hope that I answered that question.
Thank you. It is important. If people are asking the question, I think you're more likely to have the need met. So that's great to hear that people are asking those questions.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Did anyone else have any questions for Dr. Burk?
Hi, Monty. This is Avis. How are you?
Good, Avis. How are you doing, friend?
Wonderful, wonderful. I just want to bring this up because we've had some conversations about this, and I think that it may help some of the folks on this call to even assist you with some of the things that you do in reference to reaching out. I know you mentioned you're trying to reach, 12,000 congregations to get them interested in the faith-based initiative here. And so one of the things that usually happens, as you have experienced and we discussed a couple of times here or more, sometimes it's very difficult to get into the congregations because they don't really understand the program and all the components to it. And there's some kind of fear there, a fear element there of bringing this into the congregations. But if you can work around that in such a way that you kind of link up with someone that may can get you to the point person to be able to get to the pastor or the contact person is very, very helpful in
Absolutely.
Getting to those congregations. Can you talk a little bit about how that would not only help you, but help spread that word to get to those 12,000
yes.
congregations?
Absolutely. So I know that, reaching out for 12,000 with 20 people, is shooting an arrow and, trying to cover the whole country. I get it. What I would like to see, Avis, or what I would love to happen is each one of us all, when we have our faith-based forums and our faith-based trainings where we do them online, we've had to gravitate or graduate over to online training platforms. I would love to be more active with this adult committee and possibly with some of your agencies to maybe jump on some of our phone calls and tell people who you are and what you do. A lot of our faith community, they reach out to us to try to better understand what resources are available, but they still, even though they know the resource exists, they still don't know exactly what the resource is. When you start telling a community who have people that are professional in something entirely different, hey, here's a number to a treatment agency. Here's how you get your people into treatment. They don't even know what treatment is, who you are, where you're from, why you're in their community. And these are questions that people ask now. We live in an age of social media misinformation. People post things on social media with no fact check, no peer review. And it sometimes alarms people or it sends people into a position where they get wrong information. So how we could be more effective is more partnerships. Maybe as we progress and hopefully we start to connect more, I would love to have anyone on this phone call, anyone that represents an agency, come and speak or jump on some of our Lifeline Zoom calls or our faith-based community coordinator Zoom or WebEx trainings just to say, hey, hi, I'm Evelyn. This is my program. This is what we do. We are in your community. I'm open to have this conversation. Our faith-based coordinators have literally traveled around the state. They connect with almost 1,100 congregations in quarters 3 and 4 only, FY20. That means that's how many people that connected to them on web, WebEx, FaceTime, et cetera, new congregations. Some of them we don't even work with. We just met them for the first time. So imagine going forward with that connection. If we could really explain to them the significance of understanding treatment, recovery, housing, maybe building new partners where none existed. A lot of our faith communities, they're not looking to us for financial resources. Sometimes they're looking to give us a resource, like to donate time, to donate manpower. The faith community makes up 75% of the volunteer workforce in the United States. That's a statistic that we need to really think about. So as we move forward, there's a lot of things that our nonprofit hands can't do because they run out. But many other volunteer hands can do much more. But how can we get them there? We need for them to understand what we do and how they can partner with us. So instead of there being barriers to communication, we need to knock down those walls and connect and somehow try to figure out the bridge. So Avis, I know me and you talked about that on multiple occasions, really getting more active with some of our diverse communities around the state to pull people in that have not been traditionally involved in prevention, treatment, and recovery. I just built a relationship with the Kurdish community in the last week. to work with them in Nashville to build recovery support programs. The Curtis community are Christian and Muslim. They have two different parts of their community, but they all suffer from mental health and substance abuse issues and lack of resources. So next week we're going to do a Zoom meeting and we're going to talk about how to build support meetings with that community. We need to do that with all community. So I may be calling on some of you moving forward to be part of some of these conversations, if that's okay with everybody. If it's not okay, I'm going to reach out to you anyway.
Thanks, Monty.
You're welcome, Avis. Good to hear your voice, ma'am. I hadn't talked to you in a long time.
You too. I miss our conversation, so.
Yes, ma'am. Me too. I'll see you soon.
Okay. Will do.
Hi. I have a question, or a statement, actually. This is Allison, and I am with the Living Well Network. Monty, you spoke at one of our breakfasts a few years ago, our mental health breakfast. But Metro Sabonner Healthcare has a very successful program called the Congregational Health Network.
Uh-huh.
Are you familiar with them?
Yes, I'm actually Chin.
What now?
The Chin Network.
CHN, right. The CHN.
Yes.
And so we have, as a system, it is to help our communities and our faith-based communities in helping them bridge the gap between healthcare and their congregational members. And it's actually been very successful. And we've recently have done a lot of behavioral health training as far as giving them presentations. And so we've, you know, over here in Memphis, we've been working in Shelby County with a lot of our congregations, and it's been successful. And surprisingly, it's been very well received by our congregations. Congregation members and pastors really want to know how to help their congregation. So, yeah, it's a great program, and it's been successful. It took a while, but it's making a difference here in Shelby County.
Absolutely. Allison, we have one of our navigators helps really closely with our faith-based initiative. His name is Sherman Mason. And I would really love to connect the dots between you and him. Sherman has really does a lot of work. I'm going to send you my email address. Just email me or send me your contact information so we can connect. Sherman does a lot of work with the faith community. He's not only he's a person with lived experience. He's one of our recovery navigators, been there since we started. He's helped pull our faith community in to understand the concept of an overdose is just the beginning of where the faith community can really be impactful in helping a community. And I think the Congregational Health Network, I've actually worked with you guys on different projects, but not with you on different projects. So I think me and you just became BFFs on this one. So I'm going to send you my stuff right now, and we're totally going to work together. Yes.
Yeah, great.
And thank you for saying something. I remember coming to your breakfast and speaking. So yes. I hope we can do that again post COVID, not on Zoom.
Exactly. Well, we're ready to help where we can.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Ginger again. Any other questions, guys, or comments?
Yeah, Ginger, this is Kurt. I just wanted to ask Dr. Burks, when did his beard get so gray?
Man, listen. Hey, so let me tell you about, I'm going to answer this question. I'll be as clear and concise as possible. I think it was always that gray, but I never gave it a chance to grow fully out to see it. One day I looked in the mirror, you guys, and I realized that my beard had gotten old, but I haven't. I love you, Kurt.
Good. Young at heart. I like it.
Young at heart. Always.
Miss you, Monty.
Good to see you. I miss you too, my friend. I miss the high fives and football talks.
Absolutely. Man, did you see that that stiff arm last night on Josh Norman?
Yes, I did. And if anybody else on the phone call is not a Tennessee Titans fan, you need to go Google Derrick Henry last night. That's all I'm saying. That made my day.
Boom. Right, mine too.
Hey, I spilled my popcorn on that one. Well, you all have a wonderful day. Thank you for letting me speak today. I'll mute out and thank y'all. Thanks, everybody. Good to hear and talk to everyone.
Thank you, Monty.
Thank you. Bye,
Monty. Monty.
Wow, that was awesome. Very inspirational. I'm excited to have heard that. Heard Dr. Burke speak before, but it's always good to hear the progress that folks are making across the state. you all heard him. He's going to be reaching out to you, so be prepared. And if you don't want to take a chance on him reaching out to you, go ahead and email him. I think it sounded like he would welcome that kind of interaction. The rest of our agenda, we have about 15 minutes, if I've got my time right. Does that sound right, Kirby?
Yeah.
Okay. Is to talk a little bit about our needs assessment, just so we can start prepping our thinking as we move forward in making those needs more formalized to the department as they prepare their 3-year plan. And the due date still, Kirby, is April 1st. That's a question mark.
Yes, it is.
Okay. Sorry. I didn't phrase that too well. So we do have some opportunity to think about this and move forward with some ideas over the next couple of meetings that we have before we turn everything in for Commissioner Williams and her team to make that 3-year plan. So just to review what we had on our needs assessment for last year, we were saying that there was a need to establish transitional housing and respite service to aid the homeless or potentially homeless individuals with mental health disorders as they're being discharged from inpatient hospitals and EDs or jail. And Dr. Burke mentioned jail as a big concern in his presentation, to prevent readmission or recidivism. And so that was one of our mental health needs that we identified. The second one was that workforce development is at a critical level in our state, and we're struggling with obtaining and retaining psychiatric medical providers and licensed therapists to provide effective services. So that was, so one was kind of focused on client care and one was focused on the care of the service delivery team. And then in substance abuse, we talked about the need to increase recovery housing to include peer run recovery residents, halfway house and 3-quarter houses. Also to increase education regarding recovery housing to treatment professionals and community members. So that may be a place where we can be a little more connected to the recovery congregation to help with that. And the other need was to increase the knowledge of community medical and clinical care teams about the prevalence, impact, and resources regarding harm reduction and recovery. So we promoted the need that we needed to increase educational opportunities for harm reduction and recovery throughout our community. I think I'm reading the right needs assessment. That's the one I had in my document bank that I sent in for this. So I hope I'm on base.
That's the right one.
Yeah. You know, you get so tired of working from screens. Sometimes you wonder if you're reading from the right thing. So I'll just kind of summarize that again. It was about transitional housing for mental health and ways that we might could improve our workforce in mental health. And for substance abuse, it was about housing and ways that we can improve communication within our treatment cadre across the state and our community members across the state. So,
and Ginger, this is Kirby. So the FY 2021 3-year plan, which looks at the 2020 needs assessments, it's not complete yet. It's in its final stages. And the past 2 years, what I've done is go through and highlight needs that were identified that are actually in the plan that made it to the plan. And I want to say off the bat, I know for sure recovery housing is in there, increasing recovery homes. And I also believe transitional housing is in there as well for mental health. So I just want you to be aware of that too. As soon as that's finished, I'll be sharing that with you all so you can look to see what needs that you've identified are in the plan to kind of have a better idea moving forward. But still a good, you know, it's good to start the discussions now because I'm sure a lot of needs have been identified, especially with this pandemic, that maybe weren't thought of before. So I just want you to be aware of that.
Thank you, Kirby. We'll be looking forward to seeing that when you have it finished. And thank you always for kind of highlighting our contributions to that plan. I will emphasize, though, sometimes you have to have it on your needs assessment for several years before it gets elevated to the plan. So saying that, we may not want to absolutely change what we have on here. We may want to reassess it and, like Kirby said, look at what's going on with the COVID world and how we might need to reprioritize things. So,
Ginger, this is Avis.
Hey, Ms.
Hi, Ginger. How are you?
I'm good.
Excellent. I just wanted to highlight something else. In addition to what Kirby said, we've got a little different situation going on this year because of the COVID, because of moving our meetings. And one of the things I wanted you all to be aware of, if you're not already aware of it, that we will be moving our December meeting to October 28th. With that said, it's a little bonus with that. It's a couple of bonuses with that. One of the things is usually we have the needs assessment data report feedback to present to you all at the December meeting. Ellen Amahandra, our director of research, usually does that presentation. However, since we're moving that meeting to the October the 28th, you all will get that information early. Okay, so she is working on that as we speak, preparing that information to give you our feedback on the most frequently occurring needs for the previous year's needs assessment. So you will have some additional information early to work from as you begin to discuss your needs. And hopefully, I'm sure that will be very helpful to get that information early. If by chance that something happens and that report cannot be completed in time, we will have an alternate plan for you to get that information to you, though, before, you know, you go on holiday break in December between now and then. So you will have that information as well. Just wanted to throw that out there since you will be getting some of that information earlier to work from.
That's awesome news. Thank you, Avis. I hope everybody has the Statewide Planning Council marked on your calendar if you can attend that remotely. It's the 28th, as Avis mentioned. I am looking at our agenda. I don't see and don't recall when our next adult committee meeting will be. Kirby, do we have that already?
Yeah. It is January. Let me pull that up for you. It is January 13th, same time.
Okay. Same bat time, same bat station. Yay. For those people old enough to remember Batman when it was a TV show. Well, I think I just will kind of leave it. Does anybody have any comments or concerns that they need to bring up to the adult committee at this point?
And also, did anybody happen to join the call after attendance was taken when we started? I don't see any additions, but just wanted to double check.
If we don't have any other comments, we'll give people a few minutes of their life back to them. If you have a chance to visit Northeast Tennessee, I just want to let y'all know the trees are starting to turn now. So it's a really pretty time to come up this way. You might not can get out and do a whole lot, but you can at least drive around and see the beauty of our area if you have a chance.
Thank you, Ginger.
Thanks, Ginger. Missing you.
Okay, miss you all too. Y'all have a great week, and hopefully we'll talk again later this month. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Everybody.
Bye.
Bye.